From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The new numbers are in, and house sales, home sales for May are up strong. Prices, too, up 7.9% in the last year to a national median now of $228,700, just $1,700 shy of their 2006 peak. In some markets, up much more. Even the long-awaited millennials are buying in bigger numbers. But the rental market is hot, too. Some are trapped there. This hour on Point, American home ownership and rental. Who's buying? Who's renting? Who wants to buy? And where? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you in the market? What do you see out there? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Washington is Diana Olick, real estate reporter for CNBC. She also writes the Realty Check column there. Diana Olick, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Okay, help me. I'm confused. May numbers came out, and there were lots of big headlines about home sales are surging, real estate is hot again, and I guess the numbers show that. On the other hand, home ownership is down, rentals also very high, and many people are trapped by high rents there. Housing recovery leaving poorer neighborhoods behind, says the Wall Street Journal. What's going on, Diana?
Well, it's all about perspective. You can look at those yearly numbers, those monthly numbers, and say, okay, home sales, new home sales, existing home sales are all up from a year ago. That is all true. Are they up to where they were during the housing boom? Not even close. Are they up to historical levels? Not even close. Is the home ownership rate still falling? Yes, it is. So what's happening is we look at these monthly numbers and we say, well, you know, here's the headline. Sales are up again. But what we're really not seeing is that there's been a fundamental shift in the housing market, and that is far more rental demand, a lot of folks feeling like they don't want to be homeowners or they can't be homeowners because they can't save for that now necessary down payment. So then you see the rent surging. But when we talk about the difference in affordable housing versus unaffordable, you know, that's where the big divergence is happening right now. We're seeing new apartment construction. A lot of it's on the high end. We're seeing new home construction. All of it on the high end. I mean, we got reports from Lennar today, which showed the highest average price for its sold homes in May in the history of Lennar. That's where the builders are looking. That's where they see the demand. So you are seeing this greater divide between who's buying homes, who's owning homes, and those who are still renting. And because so many are still renting, those rents are increasing, and they are getting increasingly cash-strapped.
So we've got a tale of two cities or two countries or maybe more than two here. It's interesting. You talk about, you know, we see sales surging. There's a little bit of who's we Kemosabe going on.
Real estate agents.
Yeah. Take us into that side of the equation. We'll pull back and look at the whole. But where things are selling, where these numbers are strong, sales up 5.1% last month to a season.
Yeah, but that's a monthly number. Yeah, get well, in perspective. You're looking at an annualized rate now of just over 5 million units. When we were in the housing boom, we were at 7 million units selling per year. You look at home construction and you say, oh, it's up so dramatically from last year. But look at how many homes we're building, maybe 700,000 annualized for this year. During the housing boom, we were at 1.7 million. And in a normal housing cycle, we should be around 1.1 million for new construction. So again, it's better than last year. It's nowhere near where it needs to be.
All depends where you sit or stand or lie your head at night. There's talk of millennials getting in. They've been very, very below par in showing up here for all kinds of reasons that we understand. A year ago, sales to first-time buyers were only 27% of sales. In the last reporting period, 32%. What about that?
But remember what a first-time home buyer is. See, you think that a first-time home buyer is this young millennial.
Oh.
A first-time home buyer, by definition, is someone who has not owned a home for the past 3 years. So I am nowhere near being a millennial, but if I chose to sell my house, rent for 3 years, and then come back to the market in my 50s, say, I would be a first-time home buyer.
Whoa, so that's by no means a synonym for millennial. Last 3 years, that includes everybody who was underwater and maybe isn't anymore.
And it could be boomerang buyers, which we recently did a story on, because remember,
what's that, a boomerang buyer?
A boomerang buyer is someone who may have lost their home during the foreclosure crisis and has now repaired their credit and is buying again. Now, there are not that many of them, but we did see a new report from TransUnion this week, which showed that as many as 2 million potential buyers would be boomerang buyers over the next 2 years. And that's because, you know, it feels like we were just in the housing crash. It feels like we were just coming out of the recession. But we are, you know, 7 years from the financial crisis. And lenders require 7 years after a foreclosure and 4 years after a short sale before they will consider lending you a mortgage. Now, that for a lot of people is happening right now. In fact, we spoke to a couple in Atlanta who lost their home in Florida to foreclosure during the housing crisis. They are buying again. They are pre-approved for a mortgage.
So the seven-year drought ending. Yeah, ending for some so-called first time, though their first time out was a long time ago and ended very poorly. What about millennials? Can we separate them out and look at, you know, with all of their debt and their rocky career starts that had to run into the recession, can we tell how they're showing up or not when it comes to home buying?
Well, I'll tell you this. I talk to a lot of millennials because that's all anybody cares about these days in the financial world is what are millennials doing? And yes, they do like the idea of home ownership at some point. Here's the problem with millennials. They are renting now and rents are very high. And that means that they're unable to save for the down payment that they need to buy a home. Also, you have to look at what's happening just in their social strata. Millennials are getting married much later and having children much later than previous generations. And those are the two primary drivers of home ownership. Most people will rent either until they get married or until they have kids and they want to be in the school district and have the backyard, et cetera. Now, there is also, however, a shift in the mindset. Is owning a home really that great an investment? Is it something I want to do if I want to be mobile, if I want to be able to maybe change jobs, change cities? I talk to a lot of young people who say, yeah, I sort of like the idea of owning a house, but I saw what happened to my parents, and I just don't want to be burdened with that. We're seeing a lot more single-family rental homes out there that are being, you know, eaten up by young families because they just don't want to own. Millennials will say, yes, at some point I do want to own a home. But that time horizon is going to be much shorter than previous generations, and that's why you're going to see the home ownership rate lower.
Of course, if everybody's renting, at some point you run up against higher rents, and that's happening all over the place. National occupancy rate here, rental occupancy rate hit 95.3% in May last month, the highest on record.
Right.
While home ownership is down at 63.7%, lowest in 25 years.
Yes, that is all true. And that's because we're not building enough apartments right now. We are seeing a boom in multifamily construction, even more, much more than single family construction. One of the analysts I talked to recently said apartments are where the party is for home builders. I think that is going to continue. But again, we're seeing a lot of it in urban cores. On the high end, I mean, there are rental buildings that are starting with studios at $2,500 a month going up to $6,000 a month because they see so much demand there from either downsizing baby boomers or from, you know, wealthier millennials living in cities or grouping up with friends, et cetera. What we do need to see is more affordable rental housing. And while certain municipalities require that a certain portion of a new apartment building be affordable housing, it's just not nearly enough. And that's where we're seeing renters really struggle on the lower end.
I mean, you've got lots of people paying more than a third of their income for rental, which is considered burdensome to the point of serious pain. They may want to get out of that. They may want to try and buy. Mortgage rates remain pretty low, 4% sort of average for a 30-year fixed rate last week. What about housing prices?
Well, that's another side to it. And it's interesting, as you say, because I'll just plug CNBC.com for a second. We did a piece on those boomerang buyers talking about why they were getting back into home buying after losing their home. And the buyer I spoke to said it is simple math. He said, I'm renting a single-family home for my family, and it is far more expensive than it would cost for me to buy right now. He said, I don't love the idea of home ownership. I don't consider it the American dream anymore, but I'm doing the math here, and my monthly payment is going to be considerably less with mortgage rates where they are now. That's what he's doing. But he's also, you know, he's got a good job now, and he's able to save for that down payment and get pre-approved. A lot of folks may want to get into home ownership because it's cheaper, but remember, you need for, you know, if you're young and you don't have great credit, you might need 20% down. You could go through FHA and try to get that 3.5% down mortgage, but again, you have to have good credit. You have to have solid fundamentals and not so much debt, and a lot of young people are burdened with debt, whether it's from, you know, college or whether it's credit card debt they've built up. You have to have really good credit to get that best interest rate.
What about a little bit of where's hot and where's not? Where are home prices going up most quickly? Where are they remaining affordable?
Well, it's kind of the same old story on that one. It's the coasts. If you go East Coast, West Coast, and even in the South, you're seeing home prices rise most dramatically. And that's because that's where demand is. That's where the urban cores are. I don't even want to talk about San Francisco, which is people are calling it an island unto itself. They used to say that about Manhattan, but now it's San Francisco.
Yep.
It's obviously far more affordable to live in the Midwest, and we are actually seeing some growth in places like Kansas City and St. Louis, places that you might not think of as urban hubs for young millennials, but people are beginning to move there because housing is more affordable. We're also seeing huge price growth in both homes and rentals in cities like Denver. We were just out in Denver recently, in fact, and that's because Silicon Valley has gotten so expensive that some of the tech companies are moving an increasing number of workers to areas like Denver, Seattle, and parts of Texas, which are really, again, pushing home prices and pushing rents. Right now, Texas, by the way, is incredibly hot, and it's because it's not all energy anymore. Yes, it's a huge part of that economy, but we're also seeing more tech and other companies moving into Texas, and that's driving the economy and driving housing.
Don't feel like you want to buy? Fine, you can rent, but rents go up too, and they're going up sometimes in unexpected places. Highest, fastest rising in the U.S., Jackson, Mississippi, up 22.7% yearly increase recently. Portland, Maine, up 17.4%. That's rents. That's rental rates where you might not expect it, but there they are, not only there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about American home ownership and rental. Who's buying? Who's renting? Who wants to buy? And where? Diana Oleg is with us. Oleg is with us from CNBC, real estate reporter there, joins us today from Washington. Susan Wachter joins us in just a moment. Diana, lots of response online here. Louise on Twitter says, perfect timing. My rent has been raised 57% in the past 2 years. Been thinking about housing all morning. That would make you think. Monica writes to us, but we can't buy houses. Our student loan debt ruined our credit. Kevin says, I think homeownership demand is strongly related to job security. That's not the same thing as unemployment and income. And Ari writes, how many homes are being bought by the people who intend to use them as their primary residence? How many are being bought as investments for rental? How many are being bought by wealthy foreigners afraid to park their money in their own countries? There are a lot of faces to this. We're going to dive in on all that. Susan Wachter joins us right now from Philadelphia, professor of real estate finance at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Susan Wachter, welcome back to On Point. Thanks a lot for being here.
Pleasure.
Overall, what do you see? What's the state of the American housing economy, or can we even talk about one housing economy these days?
Well, there is a fundamental shift that's occurring right now as we speak in America as a whole. Of course, there isn't one America. There are many, but there is a fundamental shift, and it's pretty pervasive geographically, and that is first-time home buyers are coming back. And this is after 2007, 7 years of 8 years of drought, no new homeowners. So this is an amazing moment when we actually see homeowners coming back to the market. So it is a shift. However, there's been a more fundamental, maybe we call it tectonic shift in the market, so that we're getting back to a normal, but it's not the old normal. It's what will be perhaps the new normal. And it's a very different market, a market much less friendly to home ownership. So while we see new homeowners coming into the market, the home ownership rate is dropping, still dropping. And
it's supposed to drop until the year 2030, I'm reading here.
Yeah, it is, and it's because the market conditions have shifted. And the tectonic shift is the following. You know, now we have finally, jobs are coming back, and they're coming back strong, which means that the housing market is coming back strong. That's the good news. But the bad news about it is, for the first time, as the housing market is coming back strong, with the jobs coming back strong, we're seeing rent increases, maybe not a double digit, although in many markets double digit, but on average over 5%, so significantly over the inflation rate. And this is not just a 1 year, this is a several year phenomenon, and it's likely to continue. So the great America of affordable housing, both rental and single family, Unfortunately, I do not see that in our future.
I want to talk about that rental trap, that rental squeeze. We have a lot of callers. Let's hear from the field as well. You mentioned Texas, Dinah Olick. Let's go there. Colleen, Texas. Clay is calling. Hi, Clay. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
So, yeah, you know, Colleen, Texas is one of those markets I think that is, you know, healthy, but at the same time, it's kind of troubled. You know, we have a lot of home inventory. Last I checked, it was up to about 9 months. So basically, if no other homes came on the market, it would take almost a year to sell all the current homes. Also, there's a lot of new construction, you know, so much so that the local appraisal district is raising people's home values, especially for new construction, but they're not raising the home values on the old home. So if you own an old home, you know, here in this community at least, no, your home value is staying really low and stagnant. And some of these places on the north side of 190, which is the highway that goes through Killeen here, you can pick up a home for, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 or less sometimes. And, you know, if you get into a home like that, it's not, their value is not going to come up because there's so much new construction on the south side of town, right? So who would want to buy, you know, a $50,000, $60,000 home in an older neighborhood when you can buy a new home for the same price? And, you know, I feel like as a homeowner, you know, I bought a home last year in Beaumont, Texas.
Yeah.
And it's a great market. But I just feel like, you know, people my age, I'm 30 years old, don't necessarily see the value in a home. And it's kind of frustrating.
You know, Clay, I can imagine people around the country listening to you and saying, you're talking about a home, any kind of home for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. I can imagine a lot of eager buyers. It is interesting that they're putting much higher assessments on new than old. You may be, in some ways, an outlier to many parts of the country where there are not as many new homes being built. Let me take that to my guest, and I appreciate your call from Colleen. Diana, there's new home construction like crazy in Clay's backyard. What is the national picture on that? How much regional variation on that front?
Well, it's funny when you say that because I was thinking that word in my head just as you said it, outlier. That's not what we're seeing in the national trend. The national trend is that we're seeing incredibly short supply of homes for sale, both existing and new construction, and that's what's pushing home prices higher at a much faster pace than we would like to see for a healthy market. So, you know, construction is certainly ramping up. As I said before, it's not nearly at the levels that we've seen in the historical 30-year averages. We're still, you know, only about three-quarters of that. Home builders are not putting up what they call spec homes, which is homes that haven't been purchased yet. They're really waiting for contracts before they start putting the lumber up. And so, again, I would say that's why all real estate is local. You know, there may be parts of the country where that's happening. You may see more supply out in the Midwest than anywhere else, maybe parts of Texas. But what I'm hearing in areas like Houston and Dallas, the big markets, is that they are incredibly short on supply and that home prices are reaching new peaks in those big city areas. So you have to, you know, take each piece of data, and I say this because there is just so much data out there. Ever
yep.
since the housing crash, we've been in this cottage industry of data that really needs perspective again.
Let's poke in here some more and see what we find. Louisville, Kentucky, Dominique is calling. Dominique, thank you. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Dominique here, and just calling to say a very interesting topic. I'm not in the real estate industry, but I definitely enjoy following it. My wife and I are frequent home buyers, so we're in our third home, and we sold our house last summer just because the activity was so hot in our market, and we're seeing it's increased even. I'm kind of wishing we'd held off. Our friends just sold their home, had five offers on the first day. So
wow.
Question really is just about the activity that we're seeing, and in places like Louisville, do you attribute some of the activity and the spike in home prices to lingering effects of the housing bubble and decreased inventory?
Hey, Dominic, can you tell us a little bit about your neighborhood where you've got all these offers so fast, one day on the market and sold? Is it mid-range, high, low?
It's an area called St. Matthews in Louisville, so it's a pretty popular place to be. Lots of young families.
Yeah.
It's a hot place.
Yeah. Let's look at it. Maybe to help us do that, I'll go to Seattle, Washington, and Skylar Olson, a senior economist at Zillow, the online real estate database company there. Skylar, wonderful to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom.
Skyler, so here's a call from Louisville, and Dominic's there and trying to understand what's with the spike. Do you have any sense of this market, or what determines where you get these spikes that we see around the country?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Dominic mentioned was, you know, in his area, seeming like there is such low inventory that homes go very quickly. And one of the things that we're finding, you know, from looking at data on our site and the patterns in markets across this country, is that if you are in a middle tier or a lower tier home, and by that I mean, you know, if I take all the homes and split them in thirds according to their home values, mm-hmm. those are selling far, far faster than that higher end because there is so little inventory.
Why so little inventory? We saw empty neighborhoods only a few years ago. I mean, literally, empty, abandoned neighborhoods. It looked like lots of houses in that range.
Yeah, well, it also really depends on where you are, right? And a lot of times when you have those abandoned, empty neighborhoods for a long period of time, I mean, in order to move into that home and make it livable requires so much cash and financing to build yeah. that home back up, right? So it could have an extraordinarily low price tag, but you always have to think about that next step to fix it up. And that's where financing can also get a little tricky. But for most metropolitan areas across the country, like let's set aside Detroit and other places where we're seeing, you know, a lot of vacant land, you know, or vacant properties, you are seeing really low inventory, and a lot of that is on that lower and middle tier. And that has to do with, you know, homes being one, as Diane already talked about, low construction, right? Not adding to the stock, you know, yep. very quickly at all. But also a lot of negative equity on that lower end and on the that middle end set of housing.
Susan Walker, lots of people talk about low inventory. Is it, how do you read that? How much of it is lack of new construction? How much of it is, I don't know, people just don't want to sell or are nervous about moving? What?
It is low inventory, and low inventory for a variety of reasons, much due to low construction. Still, we're not near norms of construction. But, Tom, mm-hmm. your caller, Dominic, may not be aware, Louisville, Kentucky is one of those areas where we've got significant job growth, and it's been for the last few years, and it's going to continue. So those property prices are going to increase. Construction can't keep up, is not keeping up with the demand, given the job growth that is occurring in Louisville. As across much of America today, jobs are coming back.
Five offers on the first day on the market. Jessica in Belmont, Massachusetts. Jessica, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I live in Belmont, Massachusetts. It's right kind of outside Boston. Mm-hmm. I rent. I'm 34. I'm married. My husband and I are trying to have a baby, but honestly, buying a home is something we think about every day, and I have no idea how we're going to be able to do it. Things in this area, Arlington, Massachusetts, Watertown, they're selling for $100,000 over asking. That's not rare to see. Anything from $20,000 to $100,000 over asking. Same with Dominic. Bids, you know, 11 bids in the first day. So I feel like I'm going to be 40-plus before I can even be a first-time home buyer. But rents here are also increasing. So I feel like my hands are tied. I don't know how we're going to start a family. Unlike other parts of the country, I feel like also the Boston area, our standard of housing is small, a two-bedroom, 1,000-square-foot place. Mm-hmm. That's what's affordable. That's in the $400,000 to $500,000 range here. We don't have the luxury of looking for four-bedroom, three-bedroom, some place to grow a family. So that's another big concern of mine.
So what's your strategy when you and your, husband think about it? Are you just buying lottery tickets, or do you have a firmer strategy, or just go along?
I watch the market every day, every single day. We're saving every penny. This 20% down is over our heads. But honestly, I'm waiting for something to give, for the market to give, something where there's not such low inventory and high competition and the prices maybe stabilize. You know, I don't want to be pushed out to the burbs. For work reasons, I own a business. I can't commute an hour a day. So, you know, I'm waiting for that Watertown, Arlington, whatever area.
Welcome to the world, Jessica. A whole lot of people have gone to the burbs for a long time. But, I mean, we can only wish you well. Skyler, do you have advice for Jessica? There she is in a nice suburb of a hot real estate market. If you're in that market or others, Boston or others, in that circumstance, what's your advice, Skyler?
Yeah, I mean, on the horizon, you know, for our caller, I would also kind of say, you know, there is sort of good news on the horizon in the sense that Boston home value growth has been slowing down quite a bit. So when we look at the metropolitan area as a whole, it's kind of flat, right? But you're right, there are pockets within there where it's still growing very quickly. And, you know, I think your strategy right now, remaining ever vigilant, has got to be the, you know, one of the best ones moving forward there. Unfortunately, it is a bit of a rock and a hard place when you consider your problem is also one of the reasons why rents are growing so quickly, right? In areas where inventory is very low, you have that extra rental demand of would-be home buyers that are now renting for longer, right? On top of all the other people who are now able to maybe spin out from where they once lived with roommates to, you know, go out and rent on their own. You know, all of this is directing more pressure to rent. So where rent or home values are pretty much flat in the Boston metro. Granted, I mean, I'm totally here and, you know, pockets of strong growth there, but rents are increasing very quickly at almost 6%, right? So unfortunately, it is a rock and a hard place. It's remaining ever vigilant. It's, you know, having your eye on your credit score, which is so crucial to be, you know, getting that mortgage and really being fast. I mean, you got to be really fast on, you know, getting that home and putting your bid in and you might, you know, have to really ask some advice on, you know, how far you might be able to stretch if that might be the option for you. And actually, if I can color this a little bit more, too. You know, when we think about, you know, that buy or rent, you know, and for most people at this time, that break-even horizon. So that's the amount of time that you would have to live in the home in order for it to be cost-effective to have owned it instead of rented over time is very short these days, right? So,
so that says buy if you can.
Yeah, it really does, right? But there are so many headwinds in front of you, and it can be a struggle.
Susan Wachter, speak to Jessica, 34 years old, looking to grow a family here. But what you and Diana and Skylar described sounds like for this generation, they could be in some kind of, many people, in sort of a vice for life. The real estate, rental market is so tight, so rents go high. That takes a lot out of the income. It's hard to save. How do you get out of that?
There is really no alternative but to save that in order to build for that down payment, because home ownership, housing prices are likely over the long run to continue to increase. And unfortunately, rents are likely to continue to increase as well. We're out of the old model where you could count on these downturns and you could come back to a period of no rent growth, no price growth, especially in areas like Boston. If you need to be in Boston, getting in at the floor at a low, small house or small condo, that's the way to go.
Get in wherever you can. And, of course, Diana, we can't count on these low mortgage rates lasting forever. The Fed's already talking about, you know, rustling for a long time about beginning to pump them back up.
Yeah, I mean, we will see mortgage rates go higher. We've seen them slide around, get a little bit higher just in the past month or so. But I don't think it's the mortgage rate that's the problem. And I wanted to add something to the Boston plight story because, you know, we heard back even in the early spring that they had cops out on the street at an open house because so many people showed up.
Yeah.
The neighbors started to complain and they had to call the police. So what's happening there, though, is the inventory supply, like much of the nation, yes, it's low construction, yes, it's negative equity, but you're talking about mortgage rates again? That's also playing into the inventory picture because there are a lot of homeowners right now out there who might want to move up to a bigger house, but A, they're concerned they won't be able to find it because there's so little out there. B, they're afraid they won't be able to afford it. And here's the mortgage part. They might not want to give up that really low mortgage rate they got 2 years ago when we were around 3.25% or 3.5%. Now they're looking at 4.5% potentially by the end of the year. And they're saying, well, do I want to get a higher mortgage rate when I could just maybe take some money out of the house and renovate? We are seeing remodeling really booming right now because so many people are staying in place. And that is keeping inventory so low in Boston and everywhere else.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it.
That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about American home ownership and rental. Who's buying? Who's renting? Who wants to buy? And where? Where the homes are and where they're not, where they're affordable and where they are not. We're going to go to Florida in just a moment to get an update there. Diana Olick is with us from CNBC. Susan Wachter from the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School is here. And from Seattle, Washington, Skylar Olson is with us. She is senior economist at Zillow, the big online real estate database company. Lots of response online here from Detroit on Twitter. Detroit is auctioning off property starting at $500. Opportunity for poor, but bigger for rich landlords, says our listener. Cole says, come to Buffalo, cheap and cheerful. And David says, Nashville, Frisco, Texas houses selling first day on market, over asking price, no contingencies even considered. It's nuts. Let's go to Don in Chicago. Don, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm originally from Detroit, and, you know, I'm looking to move back home.
Yes.
And I visited a workshop. It was from a nonprofit organization, NACA, mm-hmm. and they were doing loans at no down payment, no closing costs, at 150% LTV, you know, and the mayor was there, different aspects, because I had been trying to get finance for a while,
yeah.
and it was difficult because of the market in Detroit, and some of the quotes came out, it's going to bring Detroit back, and being born and raised there, you know, this type of product is good for people in my...
So you'd like to do it. So what's the hurdle, Don? Is it price? Is it availability? Is it do you have foreclosed homes that are a mess, or what's the problem?
It's a lot of properties available in Detroit. Mm-hmm. It's just an issue of affordability. I mean, they'll appraise for $50,000 to $40,000, but we need $60,000 to $70,000 of work in them. So it's a negative equity situation. So there's not enough positions. So this program is actually allowing me to get a house at 150% loan to value, and I don't have to have the same as I normally would because it was difficult.
And so that you can fix it up and make it livable again.
That's correct. And it's just making housing affordable, and I like it. I'm just trying to figure out why there's not more products out there available for low to moderate income housing other than this NACA program.
Don, let us look at that, and I appreciate your call. Susan Wachter, how about it if we look, the high end of the market seems to be doing just fine, but a lot of people do not live in the high end of anything, and they would like homes too. What are there steps out there being actively taken to help some of these neighborhoods and people in them buy and make these homes livable, make these good neighborhoods with strong home ownership again?
Well, Detroit is on sale right now, so good. Take advantage of it. And there are neighborhoods in downtown Detroit, which is coming back. This is a good program for Detroit. It's hopeful for Detroit. And in fact, rents are going up and prices are going up from, of course, bottoms. In other cities, there's almost less of a necessity for such programs because this new normal means go back to the cities, and cities are resurgent and rents and prices are going up in the core and in areas which previously had blight and abandoned homes. You see that in Philadelphia, where we now have hot neighborhoods which are right next to abandoned factories. You know, this is part of this huge surge in coming back to the city, and particularly rental back to the city. We have had, since 2006, 8 million new renter households, disproportionately of those in the city. And by the way, 800,000 fewer homeowners.
Is this boomers retiring and surging to city centers, or what's going on? What's driving
it? No, it's across the board, but it's mostly millennials and job hunters and those without jobs looking for jobs and being where the action is.
Being where the action is. Diana, let me ask you, this has come up, Aria asked us about it. First of all, how many of the homes being sold are being bought as investment for rentals? How big a piece of the picture is that? We heard in the recession about big private equity companies buying up thousands and thousands and thousands of homes. How big a change has that wrought in the market, Diana? Is that still going on to rent?
It's definitely still going on. You're seeing fewer investors in the market than you did 3-4 years ago when there were just thousands and thousands of distressed homes available, and you would see these big, you know, institutional investors like Colony Capital and Blackstone buying up huge bundles of properties. And what's so interesting about this, what they call the REO to rent, that is the foreclosure to rent, was a lot of folks said, oh, yeah, you know, that's going to last for about 4 or 5 years. Then they're going to sell those homes once prices come back. They are not doing that. At least they're not selling them to owner-occupants because the rental stream is so good right now. Their returns are excellent. They've got management structures in place. And if they are selling off some of the homes, they're selling them to other investors. And they're also lending money to smaller, mid-size, or even mom-and-pop investors to buy more of these homes because they are getting such great returns and because there's so much demand for single-family rental properties. Now, the realtors will tell you that investor demand's down to about 10% of home sales in May. But remember, the realtors don't track everything because they only take stuff that's off their own MLS. So if the banks are selling them, if they're going through outside deals, which investors often do, that share could be considerably higher. And I talk to investors who are still very bullish on buying these rental homes because they see the demand for it. And again, because they now have really good management structures in place. And people were skeptical about that a while back.
If you could do it over that big a scale of ownership. Let me ask you about that, Diana. I mean, when we had higher home ownership rates, and as you say, they're down and they're still falling. People are saying they'll fall until 2030. When they were higher, we kind of had a situation where everybody or many were in on the game. So when housing prices went up, many people got a piece of that. In this situation, it looks more like millions of Americans over a barrel and the people with capital to own those homes able to just wring every last penny out of them. It looks like just a new structure, Diana.
It is a new structure. And remember that, you know, regular Americans back during the housing boom were getting free money to buy these homes. And they were getting in, you know, no money down. I had a comic over my desk that had a dog with a paw print at a lender's desk saying, you know, that's all we need. You know, that's how they were able to buy these houses, flip these houses, sell them, buy condos in Miami, whatever, which caused the housing boom and then the bust, of course. It was all that free credit. Now, yes, it's investors either with all cash or, you know, large investors with big capital infusion from private equity. But let's just remember, and maybe this is going to be an unpopular thing I'm about to say, but those investors really saved the housing market during the worst of it. They came in, they bought up, as I said, thousands, if not millions, of distressed properties, fixed them up and put them up for rent, giving people who lost their homes to foreclosure the ability to get back into a single-family home. And in some cases, they're in programs where they were in rent-to-buy situations from these investors, where they could actually move back into the home that they lost to foreclosure. And these investors, while they had the capital to do it, and while, of course, they are making money because that's, you know, we live in a capitalistic society, they actually really helped a lot of neighborhoods come back after the housing crash.
Yeah, I take your point. I don't know if I want to give Wall Street credit, though, as the savior. I mean, wreck the economy, save the neighborhood. I mean, you can go round and round on that one and not necessarily in a great direction. Rolando in Woodstock, Georgia. Rolando, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
What do you see?
I just kind of want to echo what your guests are saying. I'm a realtor in Woodstock in the state of Georgia, and we are seeing a huge boom in rentals. I mean, that's kind of where the market is right now. Rentals, rentals, rentals. All the leads I'm getting are rentals. And I think a lot of that has to do with qualifying. A lot of people aren't qualifying. Just kind of the fact that people who foreclosed in 2006 are, you know, they feel like they still don't qualify when they just might not know what they qualify for or not.
And what about investor buyers versus ordinary citizens buying and the availability of credit for each? Rolando, what do you see?
I would have to say that investors are snatching everything up. Anytime there's an REO or a real estate owned property, investors snatch it up. And I think what banks tried to do in the past was, or what they're still trying to do, is make it difficult for investors to buy. So they'll have programs out there for REO properties like that you have to be owner-occupied. But investors are able to get around that. They're able to, you know, put a family member in there and say that they're owner-occupying when they're really not.
Hey, Rolando, we appreciate the call from Georgia. Let me go a little bit further south to some terrain that was famous for bust in the recession years. Jesse Saginaw joins us from Boca Raton, Florida, Palm Beach County. They're big county. It's not just, the Gold Coast, and they had a big bust. Professor, Associate Professor, Urban Regional Planning at Florida Atlantic University, Director of Housing, Economy, and Urban Development at the Center for Urban Environmental Solutions at Florida Atlantic. Jesse Saginaw, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
How bad was the bust? Where do things stand now?
Well, the bust was obviously bad because it made national news, international news even. But now things have bounced back, especially in Palm Beach County. They've had double-digit gains in home values since 2012. So in other words, that means in some neighborhoods, you've had increases in housing values since 2012 of 30 to 50% and even beyond that. So things are bouncing back, and it's not just millennials or Wall Street investors that are buying up a lot of these properties, but you also have a lot of baby boomers retiring to Florida. I looked at some stats that says that, say, in the next 15 years, 55% of all people moving to Florida are retirees. So you have the baby boomers, and then you also have a huge chunk of international investment coming from Europe, Latin America, as well as Canada, and they're coming in paying cash for homes and just snapping them up throughout the market.
And then to rent them or to visit them once a year?
Well, so a break, the National Association of Realtors actually did a study on overseas investment. And for all international investors that are buying homes in the United States, one in five of those people are buying a home in Florida. And based on that, 46% of them use it as a primary residence, whereas 20% rent them and 15% use them as vacation homes.
And what about the homes that are selling? Are these homes, are these high-end homes? Is it a good market for middle-class buyers? What's the range?
I'm middle-class, and the market's hot, but too hot for me, I would say. What's really happening is you do have all this international investment, institutional investors, baby boomers who are very affluent. So a lot of things that are being built are on the higher end of things. If you look at things like wage stagnation, because we've talked a lot about home prices on the show, but a lot of wages haven't really increased at the rate of housing. So the previous caller, Rolando, up from Georgia, yep, neighbor to the north, he discussed the fact that the qualifying incomes aren't enough to actually buy a home. And that's why you have this rental squeeze, because you've had wage stagnation for the last decade.
There it is in Florida and a lot of other places. Skyler, you're listening in Seattle. If you were footloose and fancy free with work you could do almost anywhere, you're at Zillow. Where would you go to find the best combination of life and housing situation?
Yeah, I mean, so we've looked at this and tried to come up with, like, you know, what's the sweet spot out there where, you know, there's still good job growth. There's a lot of opportunity there. You know, if you could move and you wanted to get a new job. And then where is it still affordable? And there you're thinking of places, some of which we've already mentioned.
Okay.
But classic examples, you know, Atlanta has good job growth above national average and yet also remains, you know, affordable. They fell pretty far during the housing bubble bust. Dallas and Houston, you know, also, you know, more affordable markets where there's good job growth. And Charlotte, right? So there are pockets out there where there are opportunities. So there are sweet spots, but you're right. For most places, where jobs are growing are where, you know, rents are becoming more and more unaffordable over time, and sometimes at really fast rates.
Let me get one more call here. Ashlyn in New Orleans, Louisiana. Ashlyn, thank you for calling. You're on.
Thanks, Tom. Hi. Yeah. So I've been renting for the past 5 years, since 2010, and I've seen some of that rapid growth in rent. And so I'm sort of in a position now where I'm buying a house because I'm afraid I won't be able to afford to in the next couple of years.
And how's it look in New Orleans? Can you afford it? Are you a, I don't know, are you an investment banker with a lot of income or?
No, I work in public education. So
okay.
I can't guarantee significant salary increases over the next 5 years.
Yep.
But I've been pre-approved. I've put an offer on a house that I did not get. And so it's just kind of an interesting climate down here. I'm looking also to buy a house where I can rent at least one unit and be able to defray the cost of part of my mortgage.
But you feel like you'd better get in now or later you won't be able to make the move, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like now or never. And I could be wrong about that, but I'm not sure.
Diana, speak to somebody, Ashlyn, you know, young, in public education. It feels now or never to her. What do you think of that perspective?
Probably right. Yeah, I mean, look, home prices are going to continue to go up. They're not, you know, some are saying that the price gains will moderate. We're starting to see that in certain of the reports that the price gains are moderating a little bit, but it doesn't mean they're going negative by any stretch. You're not going to see housing get more affordable in the near term given the inventory problems. So if you can get into a house now, and I would say renting out that other unit is a fantastic idea. You know, we think about rentals. We used to think about it as all apartments. Now we think about it as single-family homes as well. But actually, the vast majority of rentals are either single-family homes or 2 to 4 unit buildings or homes where you can have one person who is perhaps the investor slash owner occupant and then renting out the other units to defray that cost. You're seeing a lot more of that. You see it on HGTV when they're fixing up the basement unit all the time too.
Right.
It's a great way to get into home ownership if you need that extra cash.
Yeah.
And Tom,
yes, please,
something,
Skylar.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Something that occurred to me, you know, to this most recent caller and even, you know, the caller back before, as far as, you know, what are some good strategies? You know, there's also, you can check out some of the pre-market inventory that's out there. Real estate websites like Zillow and others often have, or Zillow in particular has something, you know, like a make me move, right? If you want to start targeting people who have a willingness to sell but aren't, you know, strictly on the market. So
how do you know who that is? They don't mow their lawn anymore or what?
Oh, no. Like on Zillow, when you go up, there's pre-market inventory kind of on the list, and one of them is Make Me Move. So these are homeowners that put their, you know, big goal number on, you know, on the website, and you can see whether or not that's something you'd be willing to pay. Contact that homeowner on your own, right, or get a real estate agent to help you contact them.
If you're in a position to make them an offer, they can't refuse. Our clock is ticking down on us, and I'm sorry for that. There's much more I'd like to know, but really fascinating hour. Skylar Olson at Zillow in Seattle. Thank you so much for joining us, Skylar.
Well, thank you for having me.
Jesse Saginaw in Boca Raton in Florida. Jesse, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Diana Olick, you're always great at CNBC. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
And Susan Wachter, professor of real estate finance at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Madam Susan Wachter, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is Good Luck. This is On Point.